Good afternoon. Welcome on in to Kildare Focus. You're listening to KFM. It is Monday, the 30th of January, 2023. In case you forgot the year, it's Caoimhe Hearney with you until 3 o'clock this afternoon. Coming up on today's show, we'll be speaking to Joyce Sladen. She's a senior embryologist at the Merion Fertility Clinic. She'll be telling us everything you need to know about freezing your eggs and the best age to do it. We'll be speaking to Elaine Mears. She's Privacy and Data Support Coordinator at the Rape Crisis Network of Ireland. The RCNI calls for an independent authority on domestic, sexual and gender-based violence. Then we'll be speaking to Jess Murray, Commissioning Editor of Hot Press. Nothing compares a celebration of Irish women artists to make the new public holiday on St. Bridget's Day, which takes place on Wednesday night in the Moat. And then last, we'll be speaking to Kevin O'Hagan. He's the Cancer Prevention Manager at the Irish Cancer Society. Irish Cancer Society will be offering free health checks in Whitewater Shopping Centre in Newbridge from next week. So do stay tuned. If you want to get in touch with the show, 045 898 999. You can email us studio@kfmradio.com or you can text us.
Kildare Focus with Caoimhe Hearney. Text or WhatsApp 0833 97 97 97.
Now, research from a leading US fertility clinic has found that a woman's chance of a live birth from egg freezing is linked to her age at the time of retrieval. Irish medics say early to mid-30s is the ideal time to undergo the procedure, but warn that the results cannot be guaranteed. And I'm joined now on the line by Joyce Sladen. She's senior embryologist at the Merion Fertility Clinic. Good afternoon, Joyce.
Good afternoon, Caoimhe. Thank you for having me on.
Delighted to have you, Joyce. Joyce, I suppose, look, many women probably would love to think they could pause the ticking biological clock, but that's not the case, is it?
No, it's not. Thankfully, we have the procedure now of egg freezing, so at least there is an opportunity for women to preserve their fertility through the process of egg freezing. But unfortunately, it's not a guaranteed procedure. So by virtue of having your eggs frozen does not guarantee that you will have a baby from those eggs in the future. But it is giving women some autonomy over their fertility, and it is best to freeze eggs at a younger age if that is possible for the woman.
Okay, so talk us through then the egg freezing process, and I suppose the retrieval, the egg freezing process, and then I suppose the chances and like the percentages of women who get pregnant from egg freezing.
Okay, so firstly, the egg freezing process is performed in a fertility clinic. Patients would contact the clinic and ask for a consultation with the doctor. They'll run some tests then, usually blood tests. A specific test that's very important will be called an AMH. And that blood test gives the doctor and the patient a general idea of how many eggs or what their fertility levels are like at their age. Because unfortunately, age is not always guaranteed with fertility status. You can be young and have, you know, a poor level of fertility, and indeed you can be a little bit older and have a good level of fertility. So those blood tests are a very important starting point. And they'll also give the doctor and the medical team here a reference point of what kind of medication and the levels of medication the patient would need to be on. So once a kind of a plan or a pathway has put in place, the patient will then start taking fertility medication, usually for a course of 2 weeks. And that potent fertility medication will encourage the eggs within the ovaries on that month to grow. So at a particular time in the cycle, after the 2 weeks of the medication, that patient will then undergo what's called an egg collection. And it's a relatively short surgical procedure that's performed in the fertility clinics. The patients are sedated for that procedure, and it's a process of collecting the eggs from the ovaries and passing them into the laboratory where they would then be frozen.
Okay, because we hear so much about it, Joyce, lately. I feel in the last few years that there's been a lot more about it, especially in Ireland, because it mightn't have been as prevalent previously. But unfortunately, frozen eggs doesn't always lead to a pregnancy and a baby. Does it?
No, it doesn't. I suppose depending on the age of the female when she freezes her eggs, the younger the egg will generally have a better capability of allowing fertilisation to take place when it's thawed. And that would then develop into an embryo and have a better overall success of a live birth or a pregnancy. The older the egg or advanced maternal age will have an impact on the quality of the egg. And so the number of eggs that are frozen isn't always reflective of their ability to allow fertilisation to take place.
Okay. So, Joyce, just out of interest, if someone is, like a lot of women would freeze their eggs, presumably because maybe they haven't met the right person, they're not in a relationship, or maybe they are career driven and it's not the right time. If someone is in a relationship, say, they've already met their partner, but neither of them are at a stage to have a child, would you recommend that you would have the embryo instead? Like, you wouldn't just retrieve the eggs, you would actually, you know, go forward with a further process?
Yeah, I suppose it depends, you know, for couples like that in a stable relationship, and they feel like they want to have a baby together in the future, well, then absolutely embryo freezing would have much better success rates for couples in that situation. But for the majority of patients undergoing egg freezing, they tend to be single women who haven't met the right person yet, and they want to preserve their fertility for future use. And so egg freezing for those patients is the obvious choice. But of course, they can obviously undergo freezing embryos if they want to embark using donor sperm.
Okay. What are the costs associated with this, Joyce? Because obviously, I'm sure many people would love to do it, but does it come at a high price?
Every clinic will differ in their price range, but I would say, you know, certainly for Irish clinics, somewhere between 2,500 to 3,000 euro would cover the cost of the egg collection and the egg freezing process, and that would just be one go. And then there is usually an ongoing storage fee for the eggs of around 300 to 400 euro per year, that to maintain the storage of the embryos.
Okay, so, I mean,
it is costly.
Yeah, costly.
Yeah, of course. And, you know, depending on the fertility status of the patient, they may need to undergo a second or indeed a third round of that egg collection and the freezing of the eggs to bank enough eggs to warrant kind of a good success rate should she need to use them in the future. So it can be very costly, in particular when there isn't any financial support in this country. So it is up to the patient themselves to financially fund that. Now, I think some of the big companies are offering financial support for their employees, depending on where you work, but most patients will financially support it themselves.
Okay, very interesting. The AMH test, can any GP carry that out?
Yeah, GPs can do that. They can, of course. It's often linked usually with an ultrasound of the ovaries as well, which is often performed in a fertility clinic or a maternity hospital, somewhere that has a gynecological services. But the AMH test can be run through GPs, absolutely.
Okay, and then I suppose what age then, Joyce, should people ideally be thinking about this, doing this if they want to?
I mean, I think fertility clinics would prefer patients to be, you know, in their early 30s, you know, somewhere late 20s, early 30s. I think the reality is the majority of patients attending fertility clinics tend to be about mid to late 30s, probably because they have to be in a financial position to fund the cycle itself. And also maybe they're just at that point where they want to preserve their fertility. So there's probably a different answer from fertility clinics versus the patients. But scientifically, the younger the better, for sure.
Okay, so even if you were like mid-20s, would you say? Like, I know that's so easy to say, but mid-20s, like, is a good time?
No, absolutely. I mean, that's even if people in their mid to late 20s were thinking about the process, even getting an AMH test or a scan of the ovaries would give you an indication of your fertility status at that point. And of course, if you were in a financial position to go ahead with the procedure at that time, that would be ideal.
Mm. I've heard of people, Joyce, and this is just anecdotally now, and I'm not sure if you can answer this question, but I've heard of women get tested, they get the AMH test, and they're totally fine, you know, everything looks good. And they go back the following year for the same thing, and it's like dramatically dropped. Would you see that much with you know, over a year even or two?
Yeah, you do see, you know, I suppose it depends when patients get that test done. But, you know, the decline of fertility status with female patients is in the 30s. So, you know, advancing maternal age is going to have a huge impact on the number of eggs available or growing in the ovary. And also it's going to have an impact on the quality of those eggs as well. So you could have an AMH test done at 34 and it might look suitable for your age. And, you know, depending on everyone's, you know, fertility journey, some patients will unfortunately go under early menopause earlier than others, depending on their family history. So your AMH test result could be lower 2 or 3 years later, depending on your, you know, progress and family history of that.
Okay. So let's say, just for argument's sake, I'm a woman in her 30s, like let's say 30, froze her eggs a couple of years down the line, met a guy 35 and they decided to have a baby. Like, do you have any data or like stats on the chances of someone who maybe froze their eggs at 30 went to try and have a child at 35, or, you know, anything like that, Joyce?
Yeah, the figures are low, I would say, in Ireland. I think most clinics in this country have been performing egg freezing for probably 7, 8, maybe 9 years at this point. But we're only now seeing patients return for those eggs. So we don't have a huge number of patients who have, or I wouldn't say any of the clinics have had a huge number of patients returning for their frozen eggs yet. But what we are seeing is promising. So we probably look abroad for bigger studies for those kind of figures. And there's nice studies coming out from Spain and the US who've been performing that procedure for longer. So we would look at their rates and what they're kind of pulling their statistics from. And a nice study from Spain recently suggested that eggs that are frozen, you know, somewhere between the age of 30 and 32, that each egg would have a live birth rate of 3.5%, which it sounds very low, but that's per egg. Okay. So, you know, hypothetically, if the patient had 20 eggs frozen, looking at that percentage, they would have around a 70% success rate from 20 frozen eggs, which is very, very promising from those studies.
Okay, so
that's at the age of 30, 32. You know, equally, the same study would suggest patients over 40, from one egg, you're only looking at about a 1% success rate from one egg. So again, with the 20 eggs, you're really looking at 20% overall success. So, you know, it's so indicative that age is such a huge factor there.
So is the 30-32 then, they were retrieved at 30-32?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I suppose that's the advantage of fertility preservation, that the age you are when you freeze your eggs, that's going to be the success rate paused for whenever you return for them. So whether you come back and thaw those eggs and use either your partner's sperm or donor sperm in 5 or 6 or 7 years time, your success rate will still be that of when the age you were when you froze the eggs.
Okay, so interesting, Joyce, and so much to think about there, I'm sure, for many, many women. But that is Joyce Layden there, Senior Embryologist at the Marian Fertility Clinic, with everything you need to know about freezing your eggs and the best age to do it. And Joyce there telling us, unfortunately, frozen eggs doesn't always lead to pregnancy and a baby. So if you do want to freeze your eggs, the younger the better is the advice from Joyce. Thanks very much, Joyce Layden.
Kildare Focus with Caoimhe Harney. Text or WhatsApp 0833 97 97 97.
Now, the World Health Organization is saying that COVID is still an international emergency. It is 3 years to the day after the World Health Organization sounded the highest level of global alert over COVID-19. 3 years to the day after the world sounded the highest level of it to a global of COVID-19, it said the pandemic remains an international emergency, and the UN Health Agency Emergency Committee on COVID-19 met last Friday for a 14th time since the start of the crisis. And I'm joined now by Eoin Beattie, who's going to tell us more about it.
Absolutely, yes. Yeah. So following that meeting, the WHO chief Tedros Ghebreyesus concurs with the advice offered by the committee following and regarding the ongoing COVID-19 pandemic, and determines that the event continues to constitute a public health emergency of international concern. He said, as we enter the fourth year of the pandemic, we're certainly in a much better position now than we were a year ago when the Omicron wave was at its peak and more than 70,000 deaths were being reported to the WHO each week. Mr. Tedros said the weekly death rate had dropped below 10,000 in October, but had been rising again since the start of December, while the lifting of COVID restrictions in China had led to a spike in deaths. In mid-January, almost 40,000 COVID weekly deaths were reported, more than half of them in China, while the true toll is certainly much higher, according to Mr. Tedros. Globally, more than 752 million confirmed cases of COVID-19 have been reported to the WHO, including more than 6.8 million deaths through the United Nations Health Agency. And although they have always stressed that the true numbers are likely to be much higher. Now, all countries remain what has been described here and is quotes in quotes dangerously unprepared for the next pandemic. The Red Cross warned on Monday, saying future health crises could also collide with increasingly likely climate-related disasters. Despite three brutal years of the COVID-19 pandemic, strong preparedness systems are severely lacking, and that's according to the International Federation of Red Cross and Red Crescent Societies. So there you have it, the WHO saying that COVID is still an international emergency.
Yeah, thanks, Owen, for that. And of course, we will keep you up to date here on KFM with any breaking stories. Now, I'm going to change tack a little bit and go back to Elaine Mears. She is the Privacy and Data Support Coordinator at the Rape Crisis Network of Ireland. She is calling, or the RCNI are calling for, an independent authority on domestic, sexual and gender-based violence. Good afternoon, Elaine.
Good afternoon.
Elaine, tell us a little bit about what you're calling for and why.
So Ireland is signatory to an international human rights convention called the Istanbul Convention. And basically, that convention focuses on combating domestic, sexual and gender-based violence. And because we are signatory, it means that we have certain legal obligations or human rights obligations that we have to fulfill as a country. So what's happening at the minute is that there is an independent body called Grevio. They are now monitoring how Ireland has been doing since we signed up to that convention, where the gaps are and where the issues are. So we, along with other NGOs, we sent in what's called a shadow report. And a shadow report basically highlights all of the issues and gaps and calls attention to them. So then it is up to the state to respond to those issues. So we have highlighted a number of key things. And one of the things that we highlighted was that within Ireland, we need an independent monitoring body to ensure the implementation of policy and practice around domestic, sexual and gender-based violence. So as it stands, it is really up to NGOs fallen on NGOs really to hold the government to account and highlight when there are issues and gaps. And it's not really an ideal situation because we are funded by the same person or the same group that we're essentially speaking out against. So it puts us in quite a precarious position. Mm. There's a great model in the Ombudsman for Children. So the Ombudsperson for Children, that office, they are focused on the Convention of the Rights of the Child. And that is their sole focus within that office, and to ensure that children get the best rights that they deserve under that convention and that they are implemented at state level. So that is what we are calling for domestic, sexual and gender-based violence. Because, you know, this is an endemic at this stage. One in three women in their lifetime and one in five men will be subjected to some form of sexual violence. We've just come through a pandemic. When we look at, you know, the levels of COVID in Ireland and how that was responded to, that is what we need in terms of this issue. Mm. So that's just one of the issues that we have highlighted. Another issue is around adequate funding to services, so that everyone, regardless of where you are in the country, has equitable access. And that, at the minute, is an issue. So currently, unfortunately, it often depends where you are geographically in terms of what service you will have access to, how quickly you'll be able to get into a service, and what response you will be met with. We have a centre in Ireland currently where they don't have a waiting room because they do not own their building. And we're seeing this in the smaller population centres in Ireland. The infrastructure is not there. The services often do not own their building. So it is impossible for them to provide the same level of service that a bigger centre could or a bigger service could, because they have the funding and they have the infrastructure to back that up.
Yeah, we spoke to Chalk Chairman last week, actually, Elaine, and they told us about how, you know, they're based here in Kildare and they're in Naas, but sometimes they have to turn people away because they just don't have capacity. Yeah. Those women and children then are redirected to somewhere maybe in Dublin. The kids have to be uprooted from the school, can't go to the same school. You know, in many cases, then the perpetrator is living in the home house and they don't have the rights. And it's all these awful things that are happening. So, of course, it's only natural and right that you would be calling for the independent authority. But how is it going to work in... Like, right now, you are obviously... It's almost a conflict of interest, Elaine, really, the way that things are modelled at the moment. So how is it going to work going forward, do you think?
Absolutely. And that is exactly why we're calling for this. Because we need a body that is completely independent and that can work without fear that their work is going to be interfered with or that they will be silenced or threatened with funding cuts. So that is why we need that body. You know, even again, in terms of equitable access, if we look at helplines within Ireland, so we have every rape crisis centre in the country has their own helpline. We estimate that there's about 50,000 calls made to all of those 16 rape crisis centres every year. But there's only one helpline that is actually funded in this country. Now, it is the national 24-hour helpline that's run by Dublin Rape Crisis Centre. But it means that 15 out of the 16 rape crisis centre helplines, they receive no funding. And they're reliant basically on donations and people's generosity. And, you know, a human right should not be subject to public generosity and goodwill. It is a right.
Yes.
So that is why we need this.
So you're, you know, someone in Kerry, a woman in Kerry is not going to have the same access to care as someone living more east of the country.
Well, it puts a huge pressure on these services, on individual services, to go out and to fundraise. And, you know, the access to fundraising and access to donations, that was really damaged throughout COVID and lockdowns. You know, there wasn't the ability to actually go out and do the kind of fundraising things that rape crisis centres would have done previously. And we've seen during that time a 22% increase in helpline contacts. So, you know, on the one side, we have the numbers are going up and then we have the funding is just not there. It's just not there to meet it.
OK, well, that is Elaine Mears there, Privacy and Data Support Coordinator at the Rape Crisis Network of Ireland. The RCNI is calling for an independent authority on domestic, sexual and gender-based violence. So thank you very much, Elaine. Coming up after this song, we'll be speaking to Jess Murray, Commissioning Editor at Hot Press, about a concert that's happening to celebrate St. Bridget's Day in the Moat Theatre. Don't go away. I'm joined on the line by Jess Murray, who's here to tell me about the Nothing Compares concert, a celebration of Irish women artists to make the new public holiday on St. Bridget's Day, and it's taking place on Wednesday night in the Moat Theatre. Good afternoon, Jess.
Hi, Cleva. How are you?
Jess, tell us a little bit more about this concert. You've joined up forces with Kildare County Council.
Yeah, so the event is supported by Kildare Village, and Hot Press is partnered with Kildare County Council to celebrate the first public holiday in Ireland named in honour of a woman, which is Bridget of Kildare.
Amazing. And tell us who's going to be performing on the night.
So we have Imelda May, Eleanor McAvoy, Tola McKay, Susan O'Neill, Mary Stokes, Jenna Dunleavy and local artist Megan O'Neill. They'll all be there.
All great artists, and of course the big name standing out there is Imelda May, but it's obviously going to be a great night. It's taking place in the Moat this Wednesday, kicking off at 8 o'clock. Jess, is that right?
That's it, yeah. So Imelda May has been commissioned by Hot Press to write a poem to celebrate Bridget, this legendary Irish female leader. So Imelda will perform the spoken word piece for the first time, so that's really exciting. We'll also have Sabina Higgins, wife of President of Ireland, Michael D. Higgins. She'll be doing a reading as well, so we're really excited. And tickets for the concert have all gone. They're all sold out. But you can still apply to go to see the screening of the Sinead O'Connor documentary Across the Road in St. David's Church. That's on at 7 p.m. So if you'd like to go to that, you can still apply on hotpress.com to get tickets.
Okay, that's very interesting. That is Jess Murray there from Hot Press with that news. And of course, the tickets are now sold out, but anyone who has bought tickets, it will be good to know that the revenue going to Chalk Chairman, of course, the Kildare-based charity dedicated to ending domestic violence. So it's a great, great thing to support if you can. Thanks very much to Jess for talking to us there about that. And I'd love to know what your memories of St. Bridget are, because for me, My middle name is Bridget, so Cuiva Bridget, Mary Lucia, Lucia being my confirmation name. But I was born on the 6th of February, so I got the name Bridget. And it's not a name that you hear much. And I saw that there today, that there was only 3 baby girls last year named Bridget. But in 1967, there was over, I think it was around 240 children were named Bridget. So I'm sure there's loads of Bridgets. And I know my own aunt, it's her birthday coming up now in a few days too. She's called Bridget as well. So it would have been more of that era. But I'd love to know if you were called after St. Bridget, let me know, because I know I was. And there's many events taking place across the county, of course. There'll be a pop-up food market and an additional musical performances in the potato market in Naas, of course, bringing the historic town of Naas to life for what is obviously a truly historic moment in Irish life, where us in Kildare, we have our own bank holiday named after the patron saint, of course, of Kildare, I suppose. This event forms part of the programme for Bridget 1500, taking place across the county of Kildare over the bank holiday period. And there is a full list of events on www.bridget1500.ie. So there's loads of things happening there, and you can find more about it. But let me know. If you're called Bridget, text in 0833 97 97 97. Now, the Irish Cancer Society will be offering free health checks in Whitewater Shopping Centre in Newbridge, of course, next week as part of Your Health Matters Roadshow. Nurses will administer health checks to the public from 9 a.m. till 6 p.m. on Wednesday and Thursday of next week. It'll be free of charge, which is also an extra bonus. And I'm joined now on the line by Kevin O'Hagan. He's Cancer Prevention Manager at the Irish Cancer Society. Kevin, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Cuiva. Thank you very much for having me on.
Of course, Kevin. I mean, look, a free health check, you can't go wrong there. Tell us the thinking behind it.
Well, we're delighted. We're offering these health checks now in a number of shopping centres throughout the country, and really the thinking behind it is that we'd be really concerned by the number of people with particularly cancer symptoms, and perhaps they're putting off seeking medical care when they really need to. And I know during the pandemic, and a lot of cancer cases, like 1 in 10 cancer cases, were not picked up during that period of time. And from our own research, we know over the last 3 months, about a quarter of people are putting off going to the GP because of cost, or because of that, or the overcrowding, and what they're hearing in the media. So we're concerned that people out there are putting off not going to see their doctor. And so we're providing this service in the community, in their local shopping centre, where they can come along and speak to one of our cancer nurses, have a very basic little health check done, but talk about any signs and symptoms they may be experiencing. And it's just to kind of really reassure people and connect them into the right service that they need.
Yeah, Kevin, I'm sure so many people listening in today will be delighted, because I'm sure you know here in Kildare, it's actually very difficult for people, even when they do have a GP, to get an appointment. Like, money aside, they can be booked up for weeks on end, and maybe by the time that ailment, it might have cleared up and they say, oh, look, you know, sure, I'm fine. And I suppose you at the Irish Cancer Society are urging people not to leave those little niggles go.
Yeah, absolutely. We know that early detection and the diagnosis of cancer is essential to improve health outcomes. You know, leaving those symptoms, not getting them, seem to really makes treatment very, very challenging, and of course survival then is a real problem then. So we're really encouraging people to be aware of what's happening in their body. If they have any niggles, anything that's changed, anything that's really that they can't explain, that's unusual, that has lasted for 2 or 3 weeks, whether it's a cough or a lump or bleeding, or maybe even they're experiencing weight loss or low energy that they haven't had experience before, and they notice these changes, and they're maybe a bit reluctant to go to the GP, but at least come along to our roadshow in, as you said, in the Whitewater Shopping Centre there next Wednesday and Thursday, and talk to one of our nurses. Our cancer nurses will be there to advise around screening, around tests, just around the symptoms that they may be experiencing, and just to allow people to have that conversation, and of course to get some basic health checks done as well, their blood pressure, the BMI, carbon monoxide, maybe some advice around smoking, some advice around screening. But this is really what we want people to engage with the roadshow, and we'll have lots of information there for people to talk to our staff there as well. So, ultimately, early detection is key, and that's so important when it comes to cancer, and that's what this roadshow is all about.
Do people have to be a certain age to attend the clinic?
No, it's really for adults only. It's for people over 18.
Okay.
We're not taking appointments really. If you come at a quiet time, you won't have to wait too long. The checks last about 15 minutes. So generally we get to see a lot of people. We have a number of our nurses will be there, so there's no need for making an appointment. You may have to wait a little bit, but we're just taking people, adults. Again, if you're experiencing any symptoms or you're worried about something, worried maybe about a family member, or indeed if you maybe you're in treatment or past treatment and you have some questions, please come along and talk to one of our nurses.
It's a great service there, Kevin. I suppose, look, just talking about the reluctance, because people are sometimes reluctant, and I think it's fair to say, you know, that sometimes men especially can put off going to the doctor. If there's anyone out there listening and they haven't been to the doctor and they feel deep down in their heart that they should go but they just don't want to, what would you say to them if they're listening?
Yeah, well, it's really important. And the problem with cancer is, like, we often don't, like, the early warning signs of cancer are very benign sometimes. We don't really notice them. For example, like prostate cancer for men, there are often very few early warning signs, and it's often picked up then, perhaps by a routine kind of blood test later on. Mm-hmm. There's no obvious symptom. And for many of the cancers, there's no obvious symptom. So that regular checkup with a doctor is really important. And even if you don't think there's anything wrong with you, it's no harm to go along and get that check, because, as I say, it's often picked up from other tests that are carried out not related to cancer. So it's just something that, and as I said, the symptoms are often quite benign and not obvious at all for people. So it can be quite tricky to for people themselves to be aware of what those signs are.
Okay, well, that is Kevin O'Hagan there, Cancer Prevention Manager with the Irish Cancer Society, and they are offering free health checks in Whitewater Shopping Centre in Newbridge next week, Wednesday the 8th and Thursday the 9th of February. It is free of charge, so you don't have to pay. It's on a first-come, first-serve basis. It'll be approximately 15 minutes, and you can get a GP referral if there's anything more sinister or they think there is, but you'll be able to talk to anyone about anything. So do head along there, Kevin, and you'll I suppose be pointed in the right direction, won't you?
Absolutely. And indeed, Cuiva, if people are worried about anything in relation to cancer, you can call our cancer nurse line 1-800-200-700 anytime and talk to one of our nurses for support and advice. That's 1-800-200-700. Give us a call, and we'll be happy to talk to anyone who has worries about cancer.
1-800-200-700 if you've any worries about cancer. Well, thank you very much, Kevin O'Hagan there, Cancer Prevention Manager with the Irish Cancer Society. And again, just to give you those free clinics, it's next Wednesday and Thursday, the 8th and 9th of February, 9 a.m. until 6 p.m. in Whitewater Shopping Centre, free of charge.